Thank you very much. Good evening, folks. My name is Norman. I'm an alcoholic. But I certainly want to thank the Chairman, Bob, and committee, and all of you folks for the opportunity to be down here this evening and to participate and be part of this Tri-State Convention. And before I forget it, I want to say happy birthday to Paul. I sincerely hope that he has 29 more, by golly. And welcome to all of the new people that may be here this evening for your first, second, or third meeting the first couple of weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous. It goes without saying that we're delighted to have you. And I'm sure you're aware of the fact that you've now associated yourself with one of the most popular, unpopular fellowships in the world. You know, nobody begins his life wanting to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's very little class to it. You don't run the city and tell everybody, you know, I'm a 32nd degree alcoholic or anything like that. You know, none of us run down to our high school counselor, I'm sure, and we went in and sat down, and he said, Norm, what would you like to be? And I said, man, I'd like to be an alcoholic. And he said, you know, marvelous. You know, we got a program for guys like you. So I went out and tore him up for 15 years and ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So that wasn't the way it is. And if you're new, I'm sure that isn't the way it was with you. But I can say this, without any reservation whatsoever, man, if you got a drinking problem, you'll never have to take another drink again if you don't want to. And what you're going to find here in Alcoholics Anonymous is a group of people who's going to know most everything about you, yet will still accept you, who are not necessarily interested in where you've been or where you're trying to go, but we're awfully interested in what you're trying to do today. And you know, as an alcoholic, yes, that's a break right off the top, because when I was out there drinking in those last couple of years, why, nobody was really interested in me. Unless they heard I was going to jail or leaving town, and man, they're delighted over that. Folks would say to their old rep, they'd say, where's Norm? Well, he's in Texas for 2 months. Isn't that marvelous, you know? What they want to do is get you out of sight, you know, get him, hide him, I don't want anything. This all changes. I can say that it's this, if you're new, you come in here and this group of people that you're surrounded with here this evening, they truly care about you. If you want to do something about that drinking, pick up a telephone. Make a phone call. People are going to be down there to see you. They're going to sit there not with that pity and hate that you've been used to all your life, but they're going to sit there with compassion and understanding. They're going to be folks from Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's got to be the best deal that I ever had in my life. And I'm a guy that looked half the world trying to find the best deal, you see. And I didn't find it till I got here, till I was subjected to this group of people that was going to know most everything about me, that would still accept me for exactly for what I am right now, this day. It's one of the finest things that's ever happened to me. And to the people that are new here tonight, it will be one of the finest things that's ever happened to you. To qualify the initial statement that I made, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not by any stretch of imagination an authority, a consultant, or a counselor on the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good or bad, that AA works, that it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink, steal anything, or go to jail now for 20 years and 9 months. I'm sure that nobody here tonight is really impressed with that statement, and I can tell. But I'm impressed with that statement, you see. Thank you very much. Not only that, hell, we may get a pension program going here. And if we ever do, I want to get credit for all my time. So I bring it up every time I have the opportunity. But still and all, to the new folks that may be here tonight, and this is your first couple of weeks around the program of AA, you hear a guy sit up there and say he hasn't had any booze now for over 20 years. Why, if you were like I was, I sat there that first AA meeting and I hear a guy say he hadn't had a drink for 9.5 years, and I had to say, you are the biggest liar I've ever heard. To myself, I said that. You know, nobody can function out there in that rotten jungle for 9.5 years on any booze. You got to go out there and you got to, you know, meet your responsibilities. You got to be honest and you got to deal with all them rotten people, and you can't steal anything. You can't have a hooker from time to time. And a guy's been doing that for 9.5 years, you know. My God, 9.5 years was a lifetime. I just couldn't believe it. All I could think about was one great big 9.5 years. You know, what the hell are all my friends going to do for 9.5 years, you know, if I'm not there to guide them through? But I didn't hear him say, and I'm sure he did, that he'd been cutting it one day at a time. And for the benefit of the new people that are here this evening, I've been cutting it out there one day at a time. I learned a long time ago that if you take care of the day as far as your drinking's concerned, why, the week will probably take care of itself, and will the month, and will the year. And before you know it, why, hell, 20 years have run by, and it seems like yesterday that I sat there at that first AA meeting, and I'm 29 years old, and I'm wondering why it is that I'm alcoholic. You know, as I mentioned, that isn't something, that was not a vocation. That wasn't something I was looked forward to. I sat there and wondered, you know, of all the things I could have been, for Christ's sake, why do I turn out to be an alcoholic? You know, I come from a family of anti-drinkers. Everybody in my family drinks, and I'm the only alcoholic, and that upset me no end. I sat there thinking, you know, I'm the best in the family. Why should that happen to me? Why have I got to carry the cross of the whole rotten outfit? I could have thought of a half a dozen other people out there should have that disease. But I started, you know, blaming my family for the problem I had. My people are Irish and Italian. And I felt, you know, well, that's the reason I got a booze problem. Well, I come to find out, you know, being Irish and Italian, all that really means is you're not overly intelligent. You know, that's all that means. It don't mean you're going to have a booze problem you're not going to have. Maybe you get a leg up on it. You know, the Italians made it, the Irish drank it, and I got here, I suppose. There may be something to that, but my nationality had no point on the fact that I am alcoholic, as far as I'm personally concerned. The environment, I used to think the environment, that was a brand new word when I came here. Hell, I couldn't even spell it, let alone say it. But when somebody would say, you know, what's your problem? How come you go to AA? I'd say, you know, the environment, man. I'm born and raised in L.A. Anybody born and raised in L.A. has got to be hacked one way or another, you know. But I know a lot of guys came out of L.A. that never had any trouble. They've never been drunk in their life. They've never been to jail. So apparently the environment, the area that I come from, had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I am alcoholic. I find that after giving this a lot of serious consideration and great thought, I was able to come up with one giant conclusion. I am alcoholic because of the whiskey I consume. That seemed to be my biggest problem. I drank that whiskey as hard and as fast as I could drink it out there. And somewhere in that lottery of my life, I crossed the invisible line from the social aspect of drinking into the compulsive area. Where the one's too many and a thousand aren't enough. Where I'm looking for the answer to living out there in a quart of whiskey and I can't find it. Where after that five or six, I have absolutely no control over what I'm going to do, what I'm going to say, or where I'm going to end up. And the only time I knew I had enough is when I'm laying straight out. I am periodic. I'm made periodic. A lot of us were by several things. I was made periodic by finances, economically, you know. I couldn't get a hold of enough scratch to keep going out there. I'm made periodic because of the jails that I went through. They'll make you periodic. It's very difficult to drink, you know, when you're in jail. But when I was out there and I had enough money, I wanted to drink all the whiskey that I could get my hands on. It was kind of funny here a couple of months ago. I was at a Dodger ball game with three customers, and we went to dinner before, and they drank theirs and I ate mine. It was a typical kind of deal. And we went to the ball game and they put down some more of that booze at the ball game. And when the ball game was over with, while we were going home, we stopped there to get the car in front of a joint called the Belvedere. And he said, "Norm, come on in, will you? And we'll buy you a drink." And I said, "No, I've got to be home for Christmas." And I thought it was hysterical. I heard this the other day, you know, and I thought it was hysterical. And I looked there and I was the only one laughing, you know. But it is so typical of me and many alcoholics that I know. We never quit, boy, until we were straight out on the floor. As long as I could get my hands on it, I wanted to quit. Keep on going right out there. I am alcoholic by virtue of the whiskey that I consumed and by the personality that I have. I have an alcoholic personality, if there is such a thing. I got it. I am a rationalizer, a justifier, a compromiser, and I got a rotten attitude. And, man, you don't need a hell of a lot more than that, you see. I've had a lousy outlook on living all my life. I traveled half the world and half my life. I made a complete ass of myself out there. I spent money I didn't have buying things I didn't need, trying to impress people I didn't like. And that's it right there. Run all over hill trying to be all things to all people, and I never knew what I wanted to be. Isn't that it? I spent a lifetime trying to impress the human race. I'm the guy running around town in my car in the summertime with all the windows rolled up to make everybody think I got an air conditioner, you know. Today I see the guy driving around town in their car with the windows rolled up. You know what I think? Does he or doesn't he? Yeah. Rotten alky out there trying to impress me. That's what he's trying to do. Well, I spent a lifetime out there going through this. And I come to the program and I come to find out that, hell, all I've ever wanted to be in my whole life is to be myself. And if the AA program doesn't bring me any more than that in the sobriety I found here, I can say without reservation that I'm overpaid. Because for many days I've been able to spend out in that city street, and all I've had to be is me. I haven't had to justify my existence or compromise my life. I haven't had to remember what I said yesterday, because what I said yesterday was the fact and the truth. I haven't had to hide in the doorways. All I've had to be is just be myself. When I came to the program, the people told me, says, "Man, don't impress us here in AA, buddy. We have been impressed by experts in Alcoholics Anonymous, so don't lay anything on us, because all of the people I've ever met in AA are experts." I'm sure we have none down here, but we got a lot of home, you know, where I come from. You see, if you, you know, you don't need to take my word for it, you just ask the guy sitting next to you. Now, anything you want to ask him, and five against you ten, he comments one way or another. If you don't know what the other guy's talking about, you say, "That's true," and you go on from there. They said, "Son, you're surrounded by experts here in AA. Don't lay anything on us. We've all been there." But I committed the cardinal sin one evening. I mentioned this fella. I said, "Buddy, you know I've been in jail about 25 times. And he says, "The hell you have, son. I did that in a year, you know. So There you are right now. You find out no matter where you've been, somebody got there before you did. No matter what you drank, you're going to find guys that drank more booze out there than you ever thought was built. So if you're new, come on in, will you? And buy the package that's available to you here. And take it out there on that city street tomorrow and spend the day out there just being yourself. It's a marvelous experience. It's an experience that no alcoholic should be without. If I may, this evening, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. Not to impress you, the booze and the problem, the trouble I have, but frankly, I don't know a better way to talk about the program. When the guy says to me, how does AA work? Well, AA works because it's one drunk talking to another drunk, and between the two of you stay sober. What a couple of drunks talk about out there. Well, they talk about all the hack and the hustle they had. They talk about coming to the program and find a better way to operate. They talk about things they're using today in order to stay out of trouble and to stay sober today. And that relates to me, as far as I'm concerned, to what I was like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like now. Sure, the program works because of the AA book. There isn't any question about it. And when I came in, my sponsor said, if you don't buy the book, buddy, you'll get drunk out there, so you better put up that 3.5 and buy the book. Well, the book was a calculated risk in those days. I'm sure some of you gentlemen remember it. It had a red and yellow cover. Hell, you could see it for 100 yards, you know. So when you bought the book, you put it under your coat and you went out of the meeting with it, didn't you? Typical alcoholic fashion. You didn't want anybody to think that you were trying to improve your life. Isn't that the way it goes? No. It doesn't bother the alky a bit to lay around on the streets dead drunk. You know, no. He thinks that's rather cute. Drunk out here again, yeah. Change that. You know, do something about it. Don't let them know. Oh, God, no. Don't let them know about that. So, but in any event, to the new people that are here, I highly suggest that you lay up. The inflation's going. She's going for about 4.5 for the book now, but 10 high is about the same. So you got a level move there. I highly suggest that you get the book because this is the way the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. What I was like, I told you a great deal. I'm a guy with an attitude problem, and man, if you got an attitude problem, you got a hell of a deal out there. For example, you come to the program, and you have no change of attitude. You got a small program. It's about that big. Oh, you can come in and go for sobriety and sobriety alone. Well, you know, you're selling yourself short. Have a change of attitude. Go for the whole package. Go for the way of life. The program is attitude. Life and living is attitude. I feel that this has been my major problem all my life, is having that rotten attitude, that lousy outlook on living. It started taking me to jail in the late 30s. Not for drinking in the beginning, but for stealing in the beginning. For you see, I happen to be a thief by trade. I'm an alcoholic by absorption. I opened up the Midnight Auto Supply out in the San Gabriel Valley in California. And what the Midnight Auto Supply consisted of was popping hubcaps right in the beginning. We started, you know, heisting these hubcaps and moving them out into a small market. And then we found out you can make a little money out of it, so we branched the operation out. We started getting other car accessories, everything but the motor. And then it got to be such a job to gather up all that crap, we stole the whole car. Yeah, man, the business moved out from there. I was considered one of the finest car thieves that ever came out of San Gabriel Valley. Yeah, well, we had some fair hookers out in those days, man. You had to move to get ranked up there in the top 10, believe me. I could talk about it all night, but it's difficult to explain if you've never been there, you know. It's an exhilarating thing. God gives everybody something. I felt he gave me the touch for the business, you know. I never lost a minute's sleep over anything I ever took in my life. I felt, you know, if you're jerky enough to park your car out there, friend, you're asking for trouble, you know. I went out just a few minutes ago. I was out walking. Now I noticed, man, it's enough to make your mouth water looking at all that. You get the feeling nobody's working anymore. But in any event, this was the beginning of it all. A couple of years later, I was arrested. I stood in front of a judge, and I heard him lever me 7 years in the Whittier Reformatory. He says, you can't comply. You can't conform. If this is what he said, that's fact. You react to life and to living. That's fact. I stood out there and I reacted to life and to living all my life. I never accepted living on living's terms. Hell, I want it my way and I'm going to jam until I get it. He says, if you're going to play, you got to pay. I guess that's what he meant. The old law of retribution says what's going out is coming back. Friend, that's the way it is. It's kind of a rotten setup, but frankly, I don't know how you're going to change it. I tried and I've been around some power that tried, but it seems to be everything's going out is coming back. It's in direct proportion. If it's rotten going out and lousy, it comes back the same way. That's the way it is. If you're going to play, you got to pay. And I went off to the reformatory to do the time. In a very short period of time, through circumstances, I got a release, and I'm back in the streets. And I'm still looking for the synthetic existence. I'm still looking for a way to operate out there in the fantasy land. You know, Disney's late. That fantasy land, man, I have lived there all my life. You know, I'm the dreamer out there. I still find myself going down the freeways dreaming about that big score I'm going to make one of these days out there. But not so much today as it used to be, but that fantasy land is something that I truly understood. And I'm looking for the vehicle that's going to get me there, and the whiskey came into my life, or the booze. The booze came into my life in 1940. It was Easter week. And Easter Week in L.A. is a big deal. It was Easter Week, Balboa Beach, the Rendezvous Ballroom, Stan Kenton, and Padre Beer. And, man, it was a hell of a deal right from the start. I drink that Padre, and you got a little buzzy, and you went to the dance hall, you know. And you've acted four times darker than what you were. You dance with the dollies. You breathe on. I don't know. Got a little booze out there, boy. You know, all the operation. And I am not an alcoholic. Not from the beginning. I could parallel my life with the gal last night. I'm not alcoholic from the beginning. No, I kind of worked at that deal. I moved out of Padre Beer into Rainier Ale up to 10 High Whiskey. And man, when I got to that whiskey, I found the greatest thing made since money and girls. Because that whiskey will get you there quicker. And obviously, I've been in a hurry all my life, you know. I don't want to get there though. I don't want to get there a little while. You know, I want to get there right now. That old whiskey will get you there right now. And getting there for the alcoholic is that plateau, isn't it? You drink that booze to hit that plateau, that peak, that optimum, that point where you're all things to all people. Man, you got that buzz on, and you feel so damn good, you think, if I could hold that buzz forever, and I'd order one more just to stay even. Down the chute I go, you know. But, man, there for a while, you got that buzz on, and you're good-looking, well-built, intellectual, and wealthy, and that 10 high got you there in 2 hours, and that's the best deal I had up to that time. And 10 high, economically, you'll never make a better lick in your life. And those days, he's going for about 60 cents a pint, and hell, I paid that for gasoline this summer, you know. Yeah, I couldn't help it. That pump was going, you know, 10 high, 10 high, 10 high, you know, my God, yes. And one thing about drinking that old 10 high, you never got the feeling the distillers were cheating you, did you, man? She tore at you, burned gone, and she burned coming up again. I remember how it used to come up and run out my nose and made my eyes water a lot, you know. You often wondered, why does whiskey run out your nose? And then one of your dear friends standing there going, ain't it good, Norm? God, I can't breathe, it's so very good, yeah. Well, a friend of mine explained this to me when it came to the program. You know, alcoholics have got all the answers for all your problems. He said, there's great advantages to drinking cheap whiskey. When you throw it up, you don't lose much. And hell, that makes a lot of sense. I can understand that today. If you knew, you know, write that down. You're out there drinking that $9 whiskey and you're flashing $9. Root $9, why am I? Hell, that stuff can make you sick all over again, isn't it, to throw up $9? Alcoholics are right there. Well, this all happened in the state of Oregon. I got jammed with the police department again. I was working construction, sidelining the car business up there, and I got picked up, and I had to leave the state. I came back to Los Angeles in January of 42, and I went in the United States Navy under duress. A man in one of my home groups years ago stood up there, and he told my life story. He said, if it was too big to carry, I laid down beside it and cleaned it. And that was about the story of my life until I got to this program. And so I went into the United States Navy because I got the heat on. I was given the opportunity to go into jail or go into service, and obviously I went into service. I spent 4 years in the United States Navy, and I was a disgrace to the United States Navy and every ship's captain that I served under. I went in with a lot of aspirations of being the youngest lieutenant commander the Navy ever had. I was the oldest seaman they ever had. You see, I just couldn't get the damn thing moving. Every time I turned around, when I got the arm on me. I had 3 court-martials. I had a deck of summary of general. I had 11 and a half months in a Navy pen up there on the top of Goat Island, run by the Marine Corps off a general court-martial. I had 60, 70 days in solitary confinement on bread and water at different intervals. I had maybe 10, 11 captain's mass and some other miscellaneous things that aren't important, but all directly due to booze. I fulfilled the conditions of my 4-year enlistment. I was discharged out. And the only reason I didn't get a kick out is, like most alcoholics, when I'm right, I'm pretty right. Now, I wasn't a bad sailor when I was sober. I was a good seaman, a good sailor, and a hard worker. You know, most alcoholics are. Hell, you know, an alcoholic has got to work 25% harder than anybody else just to stay even out there, isn't that right? Yeah. Hell, you're always coming from behind. You always got the heat on. You got to get the heat off. Well, you go out there and you go like hell. Well, sure, you go out to any of these big corporations, these big plants. You walk around, you see a guy running up and down the aisle. Five against you, 10, he's an alky out there getting the heat off. You know, sure. He goes like hell when he's right out there in order to get the heat off. He's married. He goes home. He washes dishes, scrubs floors, paints the house, you know, does the laundry, gets the heat off. He's gone. You know, he's out again. He's always coming and going. The only reason I didn't get a kick out is because when I was sober, I was right, and I was pretty darn right. And I came back to Los Angeles in January or in December of 1945 and into Los Angeles in 46. Then in 1946, I heard about this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. God moves in strange, mysterious ways, doesn't he? And no matter what you do or you don't do, buddy, that's the way it's going to work out. You know, so many times in my life I said, I'll never do that. I'll never go there. But I find myself back here. In 46, I got picked up 5 or 4 times in the beginning of the year, 2 plain drunk and 2 502, which is drunk driving. I was given a year suspended by a judge on a 3-year probation. I was told if I came back to the city and I was caught in a place that served or sold alcoholic beverages, I was going to do a year in a can. Well, knowing that judge as well as I knew him about, like my father. He and I kind of growing up together, this old judge and I. I knew him when he was shagging delinquents or whatever we were in them days. I met him when he got on the police court bench. He's looking at drunks, and he's a smart operator. He got up there on the Superior Court bench. I know me, did. I'm up there with him, There we are. Hand in hand we went, our careers. His one way, mine the other. But I knew when he said something, he wouldn't lie. He said a year in a can, and he meant business. he'd always fulfill his word before. So I said to myself as I left that court, because I'm about a half-smart alkie, and I said, I'll not drink in that rotten town again. Never will I drink. They've got an alarm system that goes around the city limits. And when I cross over, it goes off. It says, Alfie's here, drink. So they got me, So I stayed out. I did all my drinking out in the perimeter. 3 or 4 months went by, and I got so good I couldn't stand it. You know what prosperity does to an alcoholic. It tears him all up. I'm down one of the beach cities one night drinking with a couple of high rollers, and I committed the cardinal sin. While I was drinking, I began to think. And man, that's a bad deal, huh? You should either think or drink, but never get them both going at the same time, huh? I got to thinking about that rotten judge of that lousy town, and this is a free country, and God knows I'm a veteran. What else? The big racialization. Hell, I got in my car, drove 75 miles back to the city, went down to a joint called the Green Terrace, picked up a friend of mine, went down the main drag, and the car pulled in front of me. I'm so drunk I can't see it. I hit it and ran from the scene of the accident because I was scared to death. 3 blocks down the way, the police jerked me out of the car. They take me down. They locked me up in the felony tank, and I wake in the morning and find they booked me on a 501 felony, drunk driving, hit and run, bodily injury involved, and but for the grace of God that looks after damn fools and drunks. 4 folks didn't die out there in the city streets. You know, alcoholism is a game of seconds and inches, isn't it? A few seconds, a few inches. Had I been over 3.5-4 feet at the broadside of that car, at the rate of speed I was traveling, it would have been a total disaster out there. God does look after. When it gets salty on the street, I can't stand it today. Let me remember, huh? Let me remember 1946 and how very, very lucky I was. That life is a lottery. You check in, they give you a fistful of tickets. They say, here, buddy, run. And you run. And every time you mess up, they got to have a ticket. And if you mess up enough, you tap out. I totally believe it. And there's no tickets left. And you go out, and it's the big one the next time out. Like, you drive that car, and the fellow steps out, or you hit that car, and it's altogether different. So many chances. I don't stay sober from the fear of it. But wouldn't a man be a damn fool not to realize how very lucky have I been? And in 1946, I was so very, very lucky. I ended up in front of this judge who looked down and read to me. He says, you are a disgrace to the city and to yourself and to your people, and drinking is a terrible problem with you. And if you don't do something about your drinking, you'll surely ruin your life and all the folks around you. And I say to myself as I'm standing there, you're wrong, judge, you're lying. Now, I don't hurt nobody. The famous alcoholic statement isn't, I hurt nobody. Now, anybody's getting hurt is me. Nobody gets crushed out there. What the hell are you talking about? I'm the captain of the ship and the master of my fate and a self-made individual. I don't need this, no. But I come to the program, and one of the first things I was to hear was that I will directly affect the lives of a minimum of 20 people when I come here and find a better way to live in my life. There's 20 multiplied by 20. That I've either hurt, used, or abused directly through the efforts of my drinking. And so many, many people I'll never be able to make amends to, not in the physical sense, because they're not here. They're not available. The amends, I can't go home, for example, to see my own people and tell them I'm sorry. They were killed in a car wreck 2 years before I got here. Year after year, I used to go home and I said to my mother, baby, don't cry. What the hell, I'm going to be all right. Knock it off. I'll knock the booze off. I'll be like the old man and my brothers. You wait and see. Hell, I'll be all right. Pretty soon I'm going to do it, and later on tomorrow, and you wait and see, and you wait and see, and the years ran by, and I waited too long. And I came to the program, and they said, make amends, and I wanted to, and they're not there. And it bothered me, and I made the cross a little bigger than was necessary, for I hear a serenity prayer, which says, accept the things you can't change. You can't change it, Norm. That's the way it is. It's wreckage of the past. You got to move that crap out. It's tough enough to live today with today's merchandise, let alone trying to do something about yesterday you can't do a damn thing about. You got to move her out. It's not rationalization. It's the way it is. Nobody goes forever, huh? Someday they hang me out to dry. I make the shot. I check in. I say, baby, I'm sorry for all the crap and trouble I caused you when you were there. But it got a hell of a lot better after you left, because I met a group of people and they called themselves Alcoholics Anonymous, the long and the short, and this is my understanding. But that morning, as I stood in front of that judge, obviously, these aren't the things that I'm thinking about. I'm dying 100 deaths, and I'm waiting for him to really hit me with a big slammer. And he did. He sent me off to do the time in the city jail. And in the city jail, I shared a cell with a man that was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. 200 guys were in the can. One guy out of 200 got out of the bucket once a week to go to AA meetings, and he's the guy that I shared the cell with. Just fanatic. You know, this guy was something else. He'd go to these meetings, you know, and he'd come back from one of these meetings, and he'd sit there, and he was just dying to talk to somebody about it. Well, you don't have a big audience in a jail cell, obviously. And he would give me the full treatment. And he says, you know, I'll fix it with the sergeant. You go to one of the meetings with me. And I said, no, I don't. No, Sully, I ain't got a drinking problem. What the hell are you talking about? No, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Your case is altogether different than mine. Christ, you're 36 years old, buddy. You know, you're on the backside of that hill. You might as well quit drinking, too. But leave me out of it. No, I got no problem. You do. And so I left. And I went out from the jail. But I drank another 8.5 years. And periodically, as the years went by, I used to wonder about my friend Sully and what he was doing. And 8.5 years later, I picked up a telephone looking for AA and a guy named Sully I'd shared a cell with. I found the program. I didn't find him. The years went by. 5 or 6 years, and he says, your friend Sully, you know where he is? He's up in Camarillo Hospital. He went back to booze after 3 years of sobriety. He drank his mind up, and he's got the wet brain norm, and he ain't never coming back no more. And so I quickly discounted and forgot him, and I went down my merry way. It'll be 3 years this December. I was in a meeting on the other side of town over where I live in Los Angeles. I looked down the front row, and who was sitting there but a guy named Sully. I'd shared the cell with 27 years ago, and I thought, my God, moves in strange and mysterious ways. And no matter what you do or you don't do, Norm, this is the way it's going to be. And Norm, don't give up on the guy that's still hurting, because you don't know. You just don't know how it's going to work out. Take a minute out of your busy day, will you, and send a prayer up for the alpha he's still trying to make it, because you just don't know. A lesson was taught. I had an opportunity to talk to my friend. He says, it's going great. I got 9 weeks in. I just got out of the county hospital, but that's the long and the short. And he went back to drinking his one more time in the hospital. And today, see, I find that he is back out on the streets, but he's trying to make it this time around, the way that the thing comes around. In those years that I went out, in that 8.5 years, I drank all the booze that I could get my hands on. I went to work for one of the biggest construction firms in the world. I had the opportunity to stay with these people 11 years, and in that 11-year period of time, I was at the right place at the right time, and the jobs got bigger, and the jobs got better, and so did the responsibility, and so did the money. I had to have the money. Man, I got a big overhead by now, and I got to make that money in order to cut the overhead. I have met and married a red-headed Irish woman who's pregnant every other year. That's a hell of an overhead, you know. God, it got to the point that I just couldn't hardly make it out there. She got herself in that shape 8 times. I couldn't believe it, you know. I'd be sitting on the bar stool and I'd say to myself, and I'm rarely home anymore either, you know. On this it goes. Well, being married to a red-headed Irish woman had other disadvantages. She had a violent temper, a rotten disposition. She yelled at me all the time. And anything a sensitive alcoholic can't tolerate is that people yell at him. My God, you're out there drunk for 3 or 4 days and you come home. You're tired. You've been busy out there, yeah. And you walk in the house and you want a little loving affection, baby. You know, yeah. Oh, no, you walk through the door from 20 feet, she's gone, you're drunk again. And I was, I stand there dumbfounded. How the hell does she know that, I wonder? Call her on the telephone and she'd say, you're drinking, aren't you? And I'd be, where the hell is that guy, you know? Always she was able to know, but you got to get her on the defensive. Isn't that important? So you hit her with that intelligent question. Do you know who you're talking to? Boy, that gets him right there, doesn't it? He's been talking to the same slob now for over 20 years or 10 years or whatever it is, but you want to be reassured, so you say, do you know who you're talking to? And she says, no, I know who I'm talking to, you know. Mimic me is the only way them Irish can do it. Sometimes that happens when you have your best friend with you, huh? Your new business partner. You met him in the saloon last night. You've invited him home. And you stand there with a blind leading the blind. I say, woman, you embarrassed me in front of my best friend. And I couldn't remember his name, you know. And if you don't apologize, I'm going to leave, and I'm never coming back again as long as I live. And she'd go down and throw all my clothes out. Isn't that a hell of a notion? That's embarrassing in front of your new business partner. So you pick up your clothes, don't you? And you pack them out to the car, the old clothes-packing alcoholic. Huh? He's a joy to the neighborhood. When you get tired of your television or your barbecuing, you can sit on your front porch and watch him. There he comes, you know, yes. You know, that staggering around out there with an arm roll of clothes, you know. Sometimes you get a hell of a show, he forgets his trousers. Here he comes, yeah.
The old turkey-kneed alcoholic out there in these shorts. Isn't he cute, Joe? And he lets you know, though, as you're going, you never miss any of this because he notifies you by honking his horn. Now, honk, 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 you know. 3 o'clock in the morning, the old horn honkers. That's the alcoholic. He says, I'm leading, he tells the neighbors, as if they care. Yeah. Thank God, everybody says. He drives off. 2 days later, he's back again, though, isn't it? The paradox. Here he comes in. Flat tire and all. The old rim driver, yeah. Too drunk to change it. He drives on it. Here he comes, you know. The old tire's flopping in there. The sparks are flying off of the rim. Everybody in the neighborhood runs out. Get the kids out, though. Here he comes, you know. He's got the death grip on the steering wheel, driving down there, trying to act sober, isn't he? Yes. Pulls the car into the driveway, opens the door. He falls out there. Red-headed woman. I always got to go through that third act. You know, I got to stand there with the tears running down. Hey, baby, Jesus, give me a break. Yeah, now, throw me out now. You know what I'm going to do for you? Got a hell of a deal. Remember that new priest you was telling me about? I'm going down and take another pledge. That's what I'm going to do for you. Yeah. Well, that doctor you wanted me to see, I'm going to do that. And you lie, and you cheat a little, and you con, and you get back in. And as soon as you get in, then you start scheming to get back out again, don't you? Yeah. So obviously, you see, I've got a big overhead. I got a woman that doesn't understand me and I can't drink around the house. Home drinking, I grant you, is a low overhead kind of drinking. But I never liked drinking around the house, and it's obvious why I didn't. I never felt that the alcoholic reached his full potential if he's a home drinker, does he? No, you don't get the proper coverage out there if you're a home drinker. No, but a bar drinker, he can get out to them saloons and get that coverage, you know. I like them joints. I like the dark lights and the rotten music. I like the smell. You walk in, you got a sinus problem, you just suck that baby in, man. Yeah, it blows it all out. And I like sitting there with them intellectual giants, huh? Oh, yeah, you're building the castles in the air and forming the corporations and wondering what the poor slobs are doing tonight because all the big money's there. You're talking in millions and spending in thousands and you ain't got five between you, but man, let's go one more time. When you get tired of talking and lying to each other, you can sit there and look in the mirror. And they put mirrors in bars so that alcoholics can sit there and stare at themselves, you know. They call it the perpetual Maybelline look, the wide eye. There he sits, you know. It's like you never saw yourself before. You sit there. There you are. You devil, you, yes. Wondering why all the dollies aren't down there, huh? You got to go on. And you're well built. You know, you're bringing that drink up and you, oh, God, you know, you see your arm there. Christ, are you built, you know. 155 ringing wit in them days. I couldn't lick my lips, see, but that whiskey makes a killer out of you, don't you? You sit there going through all that, you know. You good-looking, well-built devil, you. You got a $30 smiling Frankie Gordon suit on. You got 50 cents worth of whiskey down the front of you. You got a little chili and mustard on your tie. I smell bad. I can't talk, and I'm a step away from disaster. Yeah, I got to go to the men's room. My evening's over with. You forget about the step. You know, there he goes. The airborne alcoholic. You clung there. Well, you're getting into the men's room there, and one of those jobs you got the nickels in, you know, the nickel kind where you got to put the money in order to get in, it's a trap against alcoholics. You haven't got the right coin. You jam the damn thing. So you got to crawl under the door. And then coming out under, you know, by now you've got a crowd gathered in the men's room. Here he comes again, you know, yes. Well, it's very embarrassing coming out under the, you know. And when you're falling out into the middle of the saloon so the bartender can pick you up, to run your head through the front door, to end up out in the parking lot with one of those famous diseases alcoholics have. It's called pavement rash. You know, it's a scab you get. It runs from the middle of your head all the way around there. Some alcoholics prefer the pyracantha bushes. You get all one trip that way. And the element of the evening is when you're wandering around out there looking for your automobile. The car losers in AA, we got hundreds of them. They're the guys wandering around about midnight, you know, with that Maybelline look, I can't find my car. You get real emotional about this thing. You call your wife, you know, have you seen my car? You know, thank God. And you tell a friend. You ever tell a non-alcoholic friend, have you seen my car? He gets the Maybelline look. He sits there, you know, like that. You know what he's thinking. What kind of jackass is this? Got a car weighs 4,000 pounds. How the hell can he lose one? But you want to tell him, don't you? It's very easy. You just get a little drunk and lose him out there. I think one of the greatest, the epitome of all alcoholics' lives are the nights that he finds his car, isn't it? My God, I remember the night that I found mine standing near a racetrack. It was around 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I saw it sitting out there in the middle of the parking lot all by itself. My God, a wave came over me, an emotional thing. It was a spiritual experience before AA. I just wanted to go up and hug her. Baby, there you are, my car. You know, God, you open the door and you get in and lay down, don't you? Alcoholics own cars for three reasons. They drive them, they lose them, and they sleep in them. Isn't that it? The old car sleeper, you can spot a car sleeper a mile away. He walks around like that, you know, yeah. From having your head scoot under the armrest all night and the door handle in your ear. Wake up in the morning, throwing up straight up in the air. Or you think your window is down, it's up. That rat, man. You knock the hell out of your head. You give yourself a bloody nose and you said, there's there yourself drinking fun. No, man, I like it, yeah. I'm having a marvelous time. That rotten L.A. whiskey. I got to get out of here. I got to get back down to Big Spring, Texas, man. They loved me in Big Spring, and they had good whiskey. It was in El Paso, or Dallas, Fort Worth, Moses Lake, Washington, or Seattle, Albuquerque, or Tucson, or on and on and on. It was always going to be different, wasn't it, once you got back down there. Wherever there was, it was going to be all right once I got there. And it surely was. It was worse. It was not better, but I refused to believe it. Because I knew somewhere, someday, I'd be able to drink that booze like my old man and my brothers and the people who I'm working with. And I took it on down to the gates of insanity or death, like each and every alcoholic before he gets here. His own death or his own insanity. And little by little, the booze got every loving thing I got. Everything and anything in my life was taken away, as it will. You don't need to believe me. If you're new, just stick around for a period of time and you're going to see it happen. For unfortunately, guys are going to go back out again. They're going to drink. And what they didn't lose, they're going to lose a little more out there. Little by little. Every loving thing I had was taken away. I walk in the house one day, and she says, Norm, and she's not even sore at me. She says, Norm, you're a drunken bum, and you'll never live to be 35 years old. Hell, you're drinking yourself to death. The kids and I are neurotic because of you. We're all scared of you around this house. How are you coming in tonight, Norm? You're going to bust up the house. You're going to shove the refrigerator through the wall. You're going to stand there waving that gun around one night it goes off, and one of us dies here, Norm. Is that the way it's going to be? I sit here looking through the front room window, waiting to see your car come home night after night after night, and it never comes, and I age a little, and I die a little more. I hear a siren run, and I think, God, the cops got you. But this time they find you dead in the middle of the street, Norm, and you're never coming down. You're never coming home. You drug us down into that gutter as deep as you're going to get us. You broke our hearts for the last time. I'll always love you, buddy. But you tore out all the feeling I had. I just got no feeling for you one way or another. Get the hell out of my life. I called for an attorney, and I file for separate maintenance, and I ask for a restraining order to be put against the likes of you, and you get the hell out of our life, and you walk out of your car, and you drive away, and you say to yourself, why me? God, why me? Why don't you get Charlie? Because he never even works. What are you going to get me for? I'm not that bad a guy, yet you know and I know. If you're an alcoholic, you drink enough booze long enough and hard enough, the booze is going to get every loving thing you got. It just is a matter of time. The wheels of alcoholism grind very slow, but very fine, and you get it enough time, it's going to get everything you got. Sure, there's isolated cases of people put up with that crap for 30 years, always hoping that jackass is going to straighten out. 30 years they watch him flop in and out of the house. You know, 30 years of picking up the pieces. 30 years of lying for him. 30 years of promises he can't keep. 30 years of telling friends and relations, don't come over, Norm's got the flu. He flew under the bed, he flew, you know, hell. I wouldn't put up with it 30 days, but there are these cases, and they are isolated. And through these cases, we have the opportunity to see one of the greatest miracles that comes to this program. Because it's a miracle. When a man and his woman walk through the door and they come into their first meeting and they're together, that's a miracle. Yes, sir. And you look at the guy and he's all green and hung out. And he's sick. And you look at the woman and she don't feel too good either. And you look in her eyes and there's a story there and it says, this jerk's tried everything there is and none of it's worked and I'm sure this isn't going to work either. And you see the same couple a couple of months later and they're walking through the same door. And the guy, he's all sharped out now and his eyes are cleared out. And you look at the woman, and she's changed too, and in her eyes is a brand new story. And it says, I've been waiting 20 years for this to happen. And finally it's happened, and today we're happier than we've ever been in our life. And it's made possible through a unique miracle that you and I here choose to call Alcoholics Anonymous. To the new people, obviously, we can't guarantee that this is the way it's going to be. What we're going to give you here in this program is sobriety and a way of life. And if you're a ditch digger, buddy, you're going to be a better ditch digger. We don't guarantee you're going to make a ton of scratch or drive a big iron or live in the big house on the hill or your woman's ever bringing you in. But if you come on in and you buy the package that's here, the day's going to come when your people are going to learn to respect you. And a guy says to me one night years ago, he says, "Well, Norm, if all I'm going to get out of is respect, that ain't a hell of a lot." I says, "Buddy, it's a hell of a lot more than you had and I had when we got here. Because nobody but nobody, including ourselves, respected us. We lost the sweetest thing we ever owned, our self-respect. A man walked into my life, he says, 'Norm, you've abused the privilege of owning it.' He took it away. My self-respect. It wasn't funny. It wasn't necessary to stand in the mirror and look. I knew. It was a feeling. You get in here and you just died all over. If you didn't have some booze to put the feeling out, it just nagged and tore at it. It was called remorse. And it eat me alive. It's what brought me in. It was the psychological second in my life. And I do believe in each and every alcoholic's life when he's sick and tired of being sick and tired as the day he recognizes he's got nothing going inside, that he's lost his self-respect. Then he knows it's not something you can check out down there at the supermarket. No, self-respect is merchandise that you and I we earn. Well, fortunate are we, the second time around, the second time in a lifetime, to regain our self-respect. We know men who will spend thousands and millions trying to buy it. They say, 'No deal.' And a guy came to Alcoholics Anonymous. His name was Norm. He said, 'Would you like your self-respect?' I said, 'I would.' He says, 'Here it is. I'll give you a chance to be reunited with the thing you couldn't buy with all the money in the world. We'll give it to you, your self-respect.' That moment, that psychological second, the day that I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, I want to believe that that's February of 1954. Well, I walked in, and I picked up the telephone, and I called the central office in Los Angeles. And the guy said, 'You got a drinking problem.' I said, 'I have.' He said, 'You want to do something about it?' I said, 'Yeah.' He said, 'Here's some numbers.' So I'd call him, and I did. And pretty soon, I got a hold of a guy, and he came out to my house, and he sat down, and he talked. And he was one of them hard-hearted sponsors you hear about. Went to school for hard-hearted sponsors, you know the kind. He sat there, and he kept saying, 'Any length to get it, buddy. If you want this program, you've got to go to any length to get it.' He said, 'You went to any length to get the booze, didn't you?' He was the kind of guy that'd ask you a question, then he'd answer it before he got the chance, you know. He said, 'Yes, you did. I know you did. You lied for it, cheated for it, conned for it, stole for it. You went to any length to get that booze, didn't you? Well, then you go to any length to get this program.' He said, 'Son, we don't pick guys up and take them to meetings. I don't believe in that. That's a softer, easier way. Oh, no, if you got a car, you drive down. If you ain't got a car, you take the bus. And if you ain't got bus money, you walk. He says, 'If you've got a car, well, hell, you're not ready yet anyway.' He said, 'If I can make it, you can.' And I thought, boy, ain't that the truth. If that old jackass can make it, anybody can. What a rotten old man he is. He and all his flaky friends just said, 'I spilled more booze than you drank.' Ha ha, you know. I used to think to myself, well, that's probably why I got here sooner. I drank all mine, you know, I never spilled much. He said, 'You get in your car tonight, you drive down to Temple City, I'll be down there.' And I drove down to the Temple City meeting. I met down there in a town called Rosemead. Guys from El Monte, Baldwin Park, and Monrovia used to go there. Never got anybody from Temple City. I just kind of throw that out. We used to meet in this Legion Hall. And on the corner was a liquor store, the Legion Hall, and the cemetery. And the favorite expression of the group was, 'If you get by here and stop here, you won't make it over there.' You know it. And they'd take all the new guys out and show them the cemetery. 'There's old Joe. He died drunk.' Ha ha, you know, they'd laugh. Alcoholics had to get sober, get a very warped sense of humor, don't they? Yeah, I went on into the meeting there, and a guy slides up and he says, 'How'd you like a cup of coffee and a red jelly donut here, you know?' This is a very wealthy group. They had so much money in the group, they had donuts before and after the meeting. It was not an unheard of thing. They'd buy three or four of these red jelly jobs, and they'd save them for the new guy. You know, they spot a guy coming in green and hung out, they go, 'Oh, jelly, red jelly donut. Ooh, no, God, no. Yo, you're looking at something you left out in the street last night. Oh, you're doing it.' And then they all stood around in groups. Oh, yeah, we didn't have any place to sit down in that meeting hall until we went in and sat down for the meeting. But they all stood around in groups of six or seven people, and everybody talked. You ever notice that in AA? Everybody talked at the same time about different things. So that was the thing. And the only guy that's not talking is the guy that's thinking about what he's going to say when them other guy shuts up. Huh? Yeah. And he's the guy you got to watch because he's the guy that interrupts everybody. Always, though, at the climax of the story. Always at the end of the story. Well, hey, there he is, interrupting. God, you spend weeks and years in AA when you hear the end of a story. You never get to hear it. When you're new, you hear that expression, keep coming back, and you think, God, that's why. Yeah. You know and I know that isn't why, but you wonder about these things. Nobody wins anything. A guy's been to jail 20 times, 30 times, 40. Guy comes in the back door 80 times, you know. Well, the meeting began. The guy stood up in front of the group that night. He began to tell everybody what a jackass he was. He became hysterical about it. The more he go to jail, the more they laugh. The more he get beat up, the more they laugh. He drank something called Jamaican ginger, give him a jake leg. Crippled him up so bad to put him in a hospital for 2 months, and the whole group was hysterical over it. They thought that was the funniest thing they ever heard. Well, if you're brand new and you're sitting in your first AA meeting, you're listening to all this, and you're self-centered and egotistical as I am, you get to thinking, Christ done sent to help him. No doubt about it. Nobody knows the guy's dying, you know, and all you laugh out. What an odd bunch of people here. And then I got to thinking, hell, I'll never make it. How can I make it? I can't qualify. God, I've only been in 25 jails and drank a little Vitalis. How the hell could I make it? No. But that talker that night, he prefaced a statement that's so very important, and I've heard it hundreds of times, but it's still as important today as it was then. He said, it don't make any difference what you drank or where you drank it. It's what it's doing to you. It's tearing up any part of your life. You don't have to go any farther. And when he said that, I wanted to jump out of the chair, and I wanted to say, buddy, you're right. It's tearing the hell out of my life. And I don't want to go any farther than that. And you said I didn't have to, and I believe you. I believe him. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program by example, is it not? What he is speaks so loud, I cannot hear a word he says. The old cliche. There he is. By example is the program. This guy stood there, and he's sharp. And his eyes are clear, and he's clean. He's got a set of threads on. Man, they must run him 100 and a half. I'm thinking, if he didn't get nothing else in this AA outfit, didn't he get a set of drapes out of it? Man, that's all right. I'll hang in a while. I'll give me a set, too. Yes, sir. By example was the program. He was the example. He was what I've been looking for all my life, I guess. And the only other thing I remember at that meeting was when he said that his woman had divorced him, and she'd remarried, and his kids hated him. But after a period of time, that he bought the package of the program, that his kids came down to see him, and they learned to like him, and then to respect him, and then to love him. When I looked around, I'd have seen a half a dozen guys sitting there, them tough, big, tough AA guys sitting there with the tears in their eyes. And the story was told that night, as I understand the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe oversimplification, but I do believe that they laughed because they were miserable, and they cried because they were happy, and they called it AA. Sure, how do you clear away the wreckage of your rotten, lousy past? How do you move the crap out? Isn't the day begins when you start to laugh a little, that you move the junk out? Isn't that the beginning of it all? Hell, when you come in here, there's nothing to laugh about, but you keep coming to the meetings if you knew, and in spite of yourself, you're going to be sitting in the meeting one day, and you're going to go, ha, 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 go let them see that, you know. But you're going to start to laugh, and when you do, the garbage is going to start coming up, and the wreckage of the past, and you're going to start to live. And put yourself into a position to grab the package, to have the change of attitude, to quit taking and start giving. That's what it is, isn't it? It's a given program. I, by nature, I as an alcoholic, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and a user of people. I'm a loser. You're looking at one. I thought I had the key to happiness out there. Hell, I never had the keychain. I never knew what it was to really be happy until I got here and learned if you're really going to be happy, you got to give. You got to give for the hell of it. You want nothing in return. The no-compromise kind of giving that you and I understand here. No, just the giving for the pure hell. We have the facilities. You pick up the ashtrays. You make the coffee. You go to central service, general service, institutional work. The 12-step call. The 12-step call above all. That's what the guy paid on me that night. The first talker I heard, I like to believe, he said, here, Norm, you brand new, buddy. I'm going to give you the program. I'm going to give you sobriety. And in turn, I'm going to give you your life. And you, in turn, will give it to somebody else, Norm. You didn't buy it, you can't sell it. There ain't no way, Norm, you can sell any part or piece of this program. It was given to you. And you, in turn, will run out in some way. Or give it away. Any way that you like, that you will give it away. It would seem to be that your life is predicated on the amount that you're willing to give away. The happiness you'll feel is the rewards will be on what you're willing to give away. For it was given to you. It wasn't bought in any piece or part. I can't justify it. I can't rationalize. It was given to me. And I, in turn, will do the best that I can do to pass it on to somebody else. To me, this is the program. To me, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to tell you that after that first meeting, that's the way it started. But, you know, different. It takes a period of time. Hell, if the second meeting I went to was damn near the last. The second meeting I went to was in a jerk town over there called Pasadena. That's where I had all the trouble. God, I went to this old-timers meeting over there. Had to be sober 10 years to read the steps. The speaker that night, he'd been in AA 137 years, you know. All the time, he showed a great big picture of himself when he talked. It was a blown-up mugshot taken him when he was doing time in the L.A. County Jail. And the point that he tried to get across when he was talking is just, look at me when I'm drinking and look at me now. And I look at that picture and I looked at Artie and I thought, Christ, you look better drunk, the guy did. Yeah. This outfit ages the hell out of these guys. I gotta get out of here. And I went out the next day and I bought a pint of whiskey and I took a drink out of it and I threw it away. And from that day to this, it ain't been necessary to take a drink. And don't ask me why. God moves in strange ways. I never threw any booze away in my life. One other time I ever threw any booze away. And that was at a Rose Bowl game and I'm down in the men's room. And I got a pint up and a policeman walked in and he says, you got two choices, in the can or in the can. Not much of a choice. I asked him, can we negotiate? No way. Get out and you go. Tears in my eyes. I poured it out, sure. But the only other time I ever poured out any booze. And I went to the third meeting because my sponsor says you got to go to three meetings. And at the third meeting, I met a half a dozen guys and we were about the same age and we started running together. And we started the important part of the program. We started, going to the meetings, and then we'd have meetings after the meetings at somebody's house or a restaurant, and that way you get some in-depth criticism. Boy, that's what I like. Took a lot of in-depth inventory, too. We sat always in the back of the group. And that way you can look out at the whole group. And you notice all the cliques out there, don't you? Yes. And the only way to beat that is you form your own clique to be against all them other cliques out there. And we did that. Yes. And then we wanted to make the big move. We wanted to, we know that in the San Gabriel Valley there, they had a lot of rotten talkers, rotten leaders, and terrible secretaries, and we were going to straighten out AA in the San Gabriel Valley. We were going to get one of our own guys in there. But you had to have a year of sobriety to run for secretary. Well, the biggest group there was the Arcadia group. We decided we would run for secretary in the Arcadia group. Stan was the first guy to get a year in. We run him for secretary. And that was, they say no politics in AA, but man, that Arcadia, you better believe a little bit, because they politicked around, but they were dealing with some of the biggest flakes that ever came out of the valley. We went down to Baldwin Park, El Monte, we imported some of our friends, and that night on election, Stan was elected by a landslide. And 2 weeks later, he joined the other cliques. And it gives you an opportunity then to look around, and you quit sitting in the back, and you move up front, and you come to find out you can have anything you're big enough to want. And AA, all you got to do is be willing to ask for it. Yes, sir. The only clicks I ever found in AA is the clicking in my head, the click, click, click. All I've ever found in AA is people. People that come from all walks of life. There's folks that I wouldn't do no drinking with, and obviously they wouldn't do any drinking with me. There's some folks I'm not going to share all my sobriety with them, and they ain't going to share all theirs with me. But don't you know there's not a man or a woman in this program that would dislike me so bad he'd like to see me take a drink. But would I call him up and say, Charlie, come and see me, he'd be there. He may disagree with everything I stand for. He may disagree with my AA life, with my 12-step life, with the way I function in my family, with my business, and the way I operate. But would I say, see me? He'd say, hang in, I'll be there. And he would sit there with compassion and with understanding, not with pity, not with hate. He would help me. He wouldn't want to see me go back out again and get torn up. That's got to be the best deal that I've ever had in my life. I'd like to tell every new person here tonight that every day has been a holiday, every meal's a banquet. But that's not the way it's been. And they didn't guarantee that it would be any different when I came into the program. They said, we're going to give you the equipment to stand out there and to be counted, just like everybody else. That's what the guy said. Yes. If you're going to stand out there, Norman, you're going to reap in the good days. Be big enough to take the rotten, the lousy, the heartbreak, the grease. Be willing to get out there and make some decisions and make them sober. It's tough out there some days, isn't it? In 1957, I made a decision I would leave the construction business, and I left. And I went out into an entirely different vocation, 180-degree turn, and I died out there, a long, hard row. And I got through, and just as I was coming out, and things were breaking my way in 1962, the worst year I ever had, 8 years of sobriety, and it was the worst year I ever had. Every other week, I'd have an honest desire to take a drink. Man, I'd get that Arab thirst. I could feel that baby going down, And my mental attitude was rotten, and it was lousy. And he says, cheer up. It could be worse. And I did, and it got worse. And before the year was out, I walked out of St. Luke's Hospital. And I said, God Almighty, for Christ's sake, old friend, what in the hell are you doing to me? This heartbreak and this grief and this misery that you passed down is too big. It cut me all out. Old shooter, I can't pack it. Yet inside you know, don't you? Inside you know that the old shooter's a kind man. He never gives you more than what you can pack, does he? He gives the big crosses to the big guys, and the small ones to the guys named Norm. Instead of standing around crying the poor mouth, buddy, about what you didn't get, take a minute out of your busy life, will you, and thank him for what you got. Thank him for what you have. For the 20 years and 9 months he let you walk down the sunny side of the street, huh? If you think it's tough, look down the road, and what do you see? I see a man. He carries a load 10 times the size of mine. But he carries his with great dignity. He doesn't find it necessary to cry about what he didn't get. He took a moment out and he thanked him. He thanked him for what he has. For the years and the program, maybe that's all, but that's enough, isn't it? When he gets to Sully, let me thank him. Let me thank him for the 20 years and 9 months he let me walk out there in that sun. And remember, the guys are not going to see 20 days. They're going to walk the street of booze and fantasy, busted dreams and broken hearts, tears by the bucketful, joints and jails and them rotten traps. They're going to die out there. So, Christ, I'm overpaid. I'm overpaid for what I've seen. For 20 years and 9 months, I've been able to get up in the morning and make the decision which way I'm going to live. I make that decision. They don't make it for me out there anymore. When I was out there drinking, everybody made the decision of which way I was going to live. No more. The bank says you make the payment, we get your car. The mortgage company says you make the payment, we get your house, and you're behind. And your woman says you straighten out, and we kick you out. And the boss says, Norm, the next time I catch you drinking on the job, Norm, you're through here. Sure, you're good, you're all right, but we can't afford you. We can't tolerate your booze anymore. Knock it off, Norm. And the humiliation of this, and the human race, they put the screws on me because I put it on myself, and I was humiliated. Humility is something alcoholics know a lot about because they've been humiliated so many times, but for 20 years and 9 months, no way. No, I get up in the morning and I made the decision which way I will live. And I walked down the street and I felt part of it. I was respected on that street by people, and in turn I was respected by myself. And I hid in no doorways because I couldn't stand the guy coming up, seeing me come up the same side of the street. And I talked to men last week, and I'll look them in the eye, and I'll hang my head from none of them. And I'll finish the day out there on a job, and I'll get in the car, and I'll drive home to a house where I live. I'll be met at the door by a woman, and she's going to be redheaded and Irish, and she'll be my woman. And she'll respect me because I'm her old man, not for where I've been or where I'm trying to go, but for what I represent right now, this day. And a couple of them bandits, maybe they're still at my joints, and they'll come to see me. And I'll be glad I'm home, too, because I'm their father. And no kid of mine will scream at me today for me not to hit their mother. And nobody will cry at my house today because their old man is drunk and tearing it up. And I've had the opportunity to see him go from small ones into big ones, and I've sent him out to get some big educations out there. And I've watched him grow. And I've taken daughters downtown, and I bought them their first pair of high-heeled shoes and prom dresses. I've seen them move from chickens into women. I've seen them stand there all draped out in them dresses. And the admiration they had for me because I'm their old man, and the respect I had for them because they're no longer the chickens, but they're now the women of my family. And I felt a tear in my eye for the respect in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've seen the jerks come to the house and take them out, too. I sent invitations out to weddings, and folks came, 400 sitting churches. And I was amazed because I was part of it all. For I could remember the day that I could sit in a room full of people and I'd be all by myself because lonely is the alcoholic. He's in a room full of people, he's by himself. And not that day, in that church, them people were there and there was guys from AA, them alky buddies, and they were sharp and they were crying and they were reaching out and saying, Norm, buddy, Jesus, I see ya. And you sure look fine. And the music started and a little chicken come out of the door and I grabbed her by the arm and I took her down the aisle and I gave her this big old jackass she married out there. Yeah. And over the years, she's called me up in the middle of the night. She says, how are you, grandfather? You got another granddaughter. And it's moments like this that I wanted to tell that friend of mine so many years ago, and I never had the words, and I don't have the capacity to really tell him how I felt when he said, Norm, what is it that you feel, or what is it that you got here this AA? And I couldn't tell him because I couldn't bring it out. I couldn't tell him how it really was, and I could only say, buddy, what I got is a hell of a lot more than what I had. And you remember this above all. It's been a long walk, a hell of a long walk from the L.A. County Jail to the point that I stand today. And but for the grace of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and friends like you, I could have missed it all. Thanks a million. God love you.